Back together again, you and I chatting it up all together on a Tuesday, August the 11th, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. We welcomed a primary day to the forefront, wondering why so many Connecticut residents constantly vote for candidates who really, when you look at it, don't get a whole lot done. ABC News law enforcement contributor and retired senior Secret Service agent Don Mihalik dropped by, as well as a visit from columnist and blogger Megan Portfolio from the Yankee Institute.
Yes, 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 sir, yes, ma'am, yes, grandpa, yes, grandma, yes, Nona, yes, papa, we're all here. It is primary day. How about that? Primary day, Tuesday, the 11th of August, 2026. How are you? You all right? Yeah, you look better than you did yesterday. I'm kidding. Not even me and my ultra perception can see, folks. But you can see me on the video screen, twitch.com, WICC, and Voice of Connecticut, of course, on YouTube. And we will be live on Facebook in the coming days as well. So you'll be able to watch me do the show sitting here in front of a very expensive microphone surrounded by very expensive equipment, slurping coffee and water and whatever I jam in my gut through the 4 hours we're here. But we're here. Producer Will is here handing the news today as well. Andrew Krause on the traffic and me and Paul Piork, too, on the weather right here. All right, what do you think? Governor Ned Lamont versus Josh Elliott. All the indicators are that Ned Lamont's going to win this. I'm in, and of course I'm not a registered Democrat, so I didn't vote. I am a registered Republican. However, the notion of open primaries does kind of appeal to me in some way. We've talked about that. About 15 to 20 states have open primaries. Connecticut's primaries are not open, meaning you have to be registered with either the state Republican Party or the state Democratic Party to vote in primaries. So, of course, today, if you're voting today or you voted previously over about the, what do we have, like a week or so of early voting here, right? So you would have had to have been a Democrat to do that, or you would have had to register, maybe deregister as a Republican if you want to do kind of an Operation Chaos thing. But we do not have open primaries here in Connecticut, as Will mentioned through the news there. So if you are voting today, or if you voted in the past few days, you are, well, if you're voting today, you're a Democrat in the gubernatorial race. Now, there are some scattered primaries around the state as well. And if you don't know what your primary race is by this time, there's nothing I can do for you. If I know I'm supposed to get up here in front of a mic and say, geez, make sure you vote if you're registered. And if you're wondering where to vote, no. If you don't know, the polls are open for another, 5 hours and 49 minutes. And let me do the math here, 22 seconds, tick-tock. If you don't know who you have to vote by now, just, I can't help you. I can't. Are you a Democrat? Did you vote today? Did you vote over the past few days? And there are some Republican primaries scattered around the state as well. Like I said, if you know, you know. If you don't, you don't by this time. Now, there is a poll out there, and I think now look, could Josh Elliott win this? Of course he could. You talk about that would be an, or if Josh Elliott were to win today, in the long pantheon and history of Connecticut politics, this might be like a U.S. versus the Russians moment, 1980 Winter Olympics. It might be. It might be. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. In a new poll just released by Channel 3, WFSB, Sacred Heart University, go Pios, and a poll from the Connecticut Insider, Ned Lamont has a lead of 57.3 to Josh Elliott's 21.8. I will be surprised if he ends up with that low of a number. I will be surprised. Because he got, 25% at the convention? Is that what it was?
75 to 25, Governor Lamont. So according to this poll, then, that would predict a drop-off of 3.2%. That would surprise me. Now, I personally think, and this is part of our question of the day here, facebook.com/voiceofct, Voice of Connecticut. What do you think? My guess is 65-35, Lamont. I just think Josh Elliott will do better than the 20 or 21 or 22%. Not that I'm praying for him to do better. Not that I, he suddenly caught my eye on something. No, but I am going to be surprised if there is not more of a young vote, a youth vote for Governor Ned Lamont, for Josh Elliott, rather. Now, that's all assuming that the youths out there, the many wonderful youths of our society, are in any way, shape, or form captivated by this. Connecticut, of course, famously has really low turnout primaries. We just do. It's just, I don't know what it is, if it's in the water, if it's in the air, if it's in the soil, if it's a combination of one, two, or all three, I don't know. Occasionally, there's some interest in these primaries, but turnout is going to be interesting. So according to this poll from Sacred Heart University, WFSB Channel 3 and the Connecticut Insider, according to that, the governor is leading 57 to about 22. I have to check the prediction markets, too. I have to check and see what Kalshi is saying and what Polymarket is saying as well. Yes, those are legal now. You can actually, one of my great desires is the ability to bet on politics in Connecticut. I'm not a betting guy. I have not made any sort of wagers on sports or whatever in Connecticut, whatever. So, we shall see. But this is the first time today, by the way, in decades, multiple decades, that a sitting Connecticut governor was primaried by his or her own party. Do you remember the last time that happened? We'll talk about that coming up. But our question of the day, as we kick it off on this merry primary day, Primary Day Tuesday, the 11th of August, 2026. Who's going to win? Who is the winner? A lot of people weighing in on this already. Who wins today's primary? Between Governor Ned Lamont and State Rep Josh Elliott, is it going to be an easy walk in the park for the governor? Or will Josh Elliott pull off something that will be written about in the history books for years to come? Yeah, so for the first time, you know what's happening today, kids? For the first time in almost 50 years, actually 48 years ago, coming up in a few weeks, on September the 12th, Tuesday, September 12th. So let's see, that would be, 47 years and 11 months ago. Was the last time, and I remember this too growing up because it was a big deal. The last time you had a sitting Democratic governor in this state, or any governor for that matter, get primaried by his or her own party. Do you remember the two combatants? Do you remember? Governor Ella Grasso, the Democratic incumbent, and her lieutenant governor challenged her. This was a big deal. Robert Killian. Grasso won the primary, went on to win the general election. The rest is history. Unfortunately, she passed away after that due to cancer, and that gave us the former late governor, Bill O'Neill. As Bill O'Neill was going to be end up being her lieutenant governor. The bartender, the barkeep from East Hampton, I should say, down by the Connecticut River there, Governor Bill O'Neill. Bob Killian challenged Ella Grasso, says here, in 1978, due to an unhappy forced political marriage, several fiscal disagreements, and an internal party power vacuum. And this all had to go back to John Bailey, the longtime Democratic power broker, the chairman here in Connecticut. Remember that? Bailey here forcing a compromise to maintain party unity, placing Bob Killian on Ella Grasso's ticket as lieutenant governor. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. And then, of course, Ella Grasso's contempt there for Bob Killian, and that gave us Governor Bill O'Neill eventually. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. So what is the, what do you think the margin ends up looking like today? What does the margin end up looking like? I'm saying 65-35 Ned Lamont. But to me, if I'm Josh Elliott, if I'm Josh Elliott and he hits 40%, I think he wins by losing. Absolutely. I just think he wins by losing. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. All right, let's kick off the phone parade today with Jason. Jason, hi. You're on WICC. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well, sir. Thank you.
Yep.
I just want to say that when you're referencing Ella Grasso and Bill O'Neill, our governor, he also put in a state income tax that was temporary and it's still there.
No, that was Lowell Weicker.
Lowell Weicker. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. That
but
was
still
that,
there.
Yeah. Lowell Weicker said, well, it's only going to be temporary. I remember this really
temporary.
Well, Jason.
It's still there.
Yeah. Well,
and I have a feeling that between me, you, and the wall, Josh Elliott wouldn't think that that's a good idea.
No. Well, I don't know. Josh's platform is based largely, Jason, on raising taxes on, you know, more upper-income people. I don't think Josh would be able to get rid of that income tax, even if he wanted to.
Yeah, I just think somebody younger that's not worth $200 million would be better in that seat.
All right, so can I ask, are you a registered Democrat? Did you vote in that primary today?
Well, here's my problem. 3 weeks ago, I called for a lawn sign for Josh Elliott.
Yeah.
I'm a Republican because I voted for Trump because I liked him.
Okay.
Trump seemed like he wants to help us. So I voted for him, but I tried to switch 2-3 weeks ago. It wouldn't let me because it's too close to the polls.
Ah.
But I am a registered Republican. I do like Trump, and I do have a Josh Elliott sign on my front lawn.
Do you really?
I've taken a lot of ribbing for it. And the girl came to put it on my front lawn. She said, "That's a gorgeous spot." I said, "Put a billboard out here. I don't care." I said, "I want to see a younger guy in there. The guy that's in there, what's he done? He rolls up his sleeves? Give
yeah.
me a break."
Yeah, you're not buying. Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it. Boy, that's got to be a first, huh? Jason, a Trump voter, asked her and was with open arms on his lawn there, proudly is sporting a Josh Elliott sign. Well, you know what? In the continuum of politics, if politics is a circle, all right, picture a circle, just your garden variety circle. And if politics is a circle and you draw one line to the right at, from the center of the circle to the right, pointing right, that's kind of like a mid-level Republican / conservative. If you extend that line to the left going the other way, that's kind of a mid-level progressive or a Democrat, right? But on some issues, and maybe this is what our last caller was talking about here, if you move those two lines up to the top in the center or down to the bottom on the far right and then far left, the lines will meet and they will become one. So there is something interesting. Oh, and by the way, that's not that crazy when you think of Governor Ned Lamont's poll numbers, not necessarily from maybe the Sacred Heart poll, the Connecticut Insider poll, and the Channel 3 poll, but you know, in some of these polls, Ned Lamont gets up to 10% support, primarily fiscally, from Republicans. A bizarre story here. something right out of a Saturday thriller. The president was seen getting onto Air Force One, and then he ended up in a catering truck? What's up with that? Don Mihalik joins us, ABC News law enforcement contributor and a retired Secret Service agent. Don, good afternoon. It's Paul in Connecticut. How are you?
How are you? Good, Paul.
How are you? Good, Don. So you saw reports of this, and you're saying to yourself, what?
I'm saying it's not something abnormal. The Secret Service has been doing this with the president. They've often used clandestine and deceptive movements in order to keep them safe in high threat areas.
Yeah.
Dates back decades. Some of the most poignant ones were in World War II, FDR was moved in and out of combat zones repeatedly, and nobody knew where he was at, including the Tehran conference.
Yeah.
The White House, he was gone for almost 2 weeks. The White House thought he was on the presidential yacht fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had President Biden recently, who took a 10-hour train ride from Warsaw to Kiev. Nobody knew where he was until he got out of Kiev and he was back in Poland. So it's based upon threat intelligence. It's based upon the protective intelligence that the Secret Service is looking at before, during the trip. And in the case of Iran, we have a state sponsor of terror who's had two plots in the United States disrupted. Assassination plots against President Trump. They've said repeatedly they want to take him out. He's mm-hmm. their top target. They clearly have strike capability, as we've seen. So taking out planes that have been sitting on the ground for a couple of days is not a difficult tasking for them. So I think all of that, plus whatever other intelligence that they resulted, forced the Secret Service to make the decision to work with the military and come up with a clandestine and deceptive plan to get him out of harm's way, so that way they didn't further risk something happening to him.
So, Don, in your experience, who would make the final call on this? Is it left up to the president, or who in the pecking order says, okay, we have to do this funny thing with this catering truck because this is just too serious of a threat here? Who does that?
Good question, Paul. And it's actually made by a very small, tight group of people.
Yeah.
The Secret Service special agent in charge of the president's detail, usually the director of the Secret Service and the deputy, and maybe some of the folks at the White House, including the mill aide and maybe the chief of staff and national security advisor.
Mm.
After that, I'm sure the Secretary of Defense is looped into it, but after that, that's about it. There are other people in the highest levels of government often that aren't briefed into these plans because they want to keep the plan quiet and safe so that way they have the highest likelihood of executing it without having an issue.
You know, final question here, Don. Does this obviously gets back to the president. Does a president usually defer? I guess he could. He's the boss. But does he usually defer to those people more in the know? Or could any president say, listen, I understand here, but no, I'm going to go on Air Force One? Or is he presented with saying, with an alternative saying, well, sir, you're putting other lives at risk? I mean, have presidents ever, Don, pushed back on this stuff or not?
Well, the most famous pushback was President Bush on 9/11, where at the end of the day, after the Secret Service and his staff told him to stay away from D.C. because of the threats,
mm-hmm.
At day's end, when they had enough information that the threats had been neutralized, all the planes were out of the air, there really wasn't much more that the White House staff and the Secret Service could present to the president to keep him away from D.C. So they advised him not to go back, but he said, well, I'm going back. And he ended up back in D.C. that night. So it's rare, though. Typically, the presidents will defer to the Secret Service because between the Secret Service and his senior staff, the National Security Advisor and the Chief of Staff,
mm-hmm.
their interest is looking out for the president. They understand that. And they present the information to the president. Say, look, this is what we have. This is what we're facing. This is what we need to do. And this is what we're and this is how we're going to roll. And most of the time, the president wants to stay safe too.
Yeah.
He goes with the best recommendation he's got.
Don Mihalik, ABC News law enforcement contributor and retired Secret Service agent, on this bizarre story that we heard about. Don, thank you, my friend. Appreciate it. Take care.
You got it, Paul.
Take care. All right, thanks. Don Mihalik, MIHALEK, ABC News law enforcement contributor and a retired senior Secret Service agent. Every Tuesday, right around this time, 5:15 or so, Megan Portfolio joins us. She of the Hartford Portfolio blog and the Yankee Institute, keeping an eye on all the stuff that if you and I tried to do this, our eyes would glaze over. Ms. Portfolio, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Paul. How are you? What an introduction.
Well, somebody has to do it, and I tell people all the time, I say, God bless her. They, you know, this is what Yankee pays her to do, and gosh darn it, you do it. Now, you didn't vote in any primaries today, did you?
No, it makes me sad because I do like to vote, but okay. I unfortunately didn't get to vote today because I didn't have anything to vote for.
Yeah, well, come.
But I'm very excited to see the results.
Yeah, come to Bridgeport. You can vote several times on several apps.
Yeah, I heard there's an issue out there in Bridgeport.
You heard, huh? Oh man, let me ask you something before we go to your thing. Now I'm thinking Ned Lamont, like 2-1, like 65-35. How close you think this is going to be, or do you think it's blowout,
you know,
city?
It's so hard. In politics really isn't my jam.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to say because we have closed primaries.
Yeah.
So only party people can vote.
Yeah.
And it's just, who are you getting? Like, is Josh going to get his people to come out?
Mm-hmm.
Is Ned going to get? It just all depends who, like, their get out to vote ground game and how effectively they were to execute it. So you can't say because, you know, Josh can get all of DSA to come out and vote for him, and you know Ned could get all the unions to vote for him. It's just who's going to actually get up and vote? But they make it so easy nowadays. It's like fast food.
Yeah, it's like really?
I mean, you might as well just open up a drive-through.
Why not? All right, let's talk about something that you do an excellent job at: is keeping an eye on state employee pay levels and pensions and pension reform. You really do a great job, Megan, of telling people the inside of this stuff and where their tax money goes. So we're talking about reforming pension reform. Explain this, please.
Yeah, so speaking of elections, this literally is going to be the most important issue in 2027.
Mm-hmm.
The CBAC agreement is up, and CBAC is the State Employees Bargaining Agent Coalition, which is a fancy way of saying it's this umbrella group that bargains for all of the state employee unions for the pension and the health care. The individual unions handle their pay raises, but CBAC, the umbrella group, they bargain for the pension and the health care.
Mm-hmm.
Now picture it, Hartford, 2017, we are having a fiscal crisis. Governor Daniel Malloy is negotiating with CBAC at the time. They could not close the budget. So they, among us other things, one of the things that came out of this agreement was a creation of another tier of pension that wasn't as great as all the other ones from the past because it was not sustainable. So it's a tier four is what they call it. And it's a hybrid plan. It's basically a defined benefit, which means there's a formula and it tells you exactly how much you're going to get in retirement. And it's a hybrid of a 401k. They call it a defined contribution. The other plans were all defined benefits. So they created this. Senate Majority Leader Bob Duff was so excited. He came out and said, hey, this is going to save us $24 billion in the next 20 years. It hasn't even been 10 years. And CBAC is now saying that they want to fix that tier system.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
so
what's so important about this is something similar just happened in New York. Just in, I believe it was in May, Governor Hochul fixed their Tier 6 pension plan, which was their lower level plan.
Yeah,
that's going to cost New Yorkers $500 million a year. Now, it's not going to cost us. I don't know what it's going to cost us because they haven't actually rolled out the plan yet. I got my hands on an internal. Well, it wasn't an internal memo. It was on their website.
Mm-hmm.
But I got my hands on it. And one of the things that they want to do is they want to make their pension more lucrative.
Yeah.
But they also want to get rid of this little clawback, that this one little thing, and it's only been activated once since 2017.
Yeah.
And it's if the pension fund does not meet its requirement. I think they say it's going to get a 6.9% return.
Okay.
So if it doesn't reach that, the state employees have to pay in 2%. Prior to that, the taxpayers had to make up that gap. So they created this tier four. So when there is a gap, and let's say the stock market goes down and the pension fund isn't performing, the burden is not on the taxpayers solely anymore. It's on them, the same employees, and the taxpayers. They want to roll that back, and they want us to fill in the gaps for their pension.
For 2%.
For 2%. Now, this is the most fascinating thing about this whole agreement. This wasn't like all the other nonsense that gets passed out of Hartford, where it's on page 600 in a budget bill or like an ESER. No, this. So when this was being negotiated with CBAC and Dan Malloy, CBAC took that deal to the members. The members voted for this. They agreed. It was 83% of them agreed to this.
Yeah.
15 out of the 16 unions that CBAC is comprised of voted for it. 15 out of 16. So they made this deal. They helped create this deal. And now they want to go back. Now, here's the other caveat to this.
Right.
When they made the deal, they got something out of this. They got job protection. They were, I think it was 4 years layoff.
No
free.
Layoff. Yeah, no layoffs. Yeah.
They did have a wage freeze for, I think, 3 of the years of that contract.
Mm-hmm.
But raises are not a guarantee. It's like, for some reason, the same employees feel that every year they are going to get a raise. That's not a guarantee in life. So they had a wage freeze, but they did get raises at the end part of that contract. And they also got a lump sum payment. So the taxpayers, we met our commitment to them. We closed the deal. We met our commitment to the deal. They got all the things that we agreed to.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're trying to, you know, change it and go back on their end of the deal.
So who would have to sign off on this, Megan, or who would have to pull the
person that gets elected governor?
Oh.
So whoever wins the primary today will be versus Ryan Fazio.
Yeah.
One of those two gentlemen are going to have to negotiate this. And this should be the number one question reporters ask these two guys when they're doing interviews. What are your plans for CBAC 2027? Do you plan on caving and giving them yet again what they asked for? Or do you plan on negotiating a fair contract for the state employees and a fair contract for the taxpayers?
And this
That's all I'm asking for.
And this is all over the CBAC members having to kick in an additional 2%.
Yeah. But it only gets triggered if the fund doesn't meet its obligation. So it was only triggered 1 year since this agreement was made in 2017. And then the year was up and it went back to normal. And now they want us to pick up that 2%. You can't make this up. But if they are successful in actually sweetening their pension, that comes from somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
That comes from the money that should be used to fund schools. That should be money used to fully fund pilot. So if this all goes down the way the unions want, it's going to be on us at the local level that has to pick up the slack, because we're not going to, because the money isn't going to be there to fund the schools and to fund the pilot program. That's going to come out of our property taxes. That's going to come out of the car tax. So this is how important this is.
And the 2%, before we wrap up here, just so people understand this, it's 2% of what?
Oh, that's a good question. It's I think it's just of whatever their contribution is. So, there's different pay scales. Everyone makes, a different amount.
Yeah.
So a different percentage. So it'd be of that percentage.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about life changing. Yes, is it inconvenient? Of course it is. It's not fun to have, 2% come off of your paycheck. But it's also not fair for it to be put onto my paycheck.
Mm. Yeah, it's
when
good
I'm not
point.
Even getting a pension and you're not getting a pension.
Yeah, good point. All right, folks, there it is. She explains all the stuff that may not make the evening news. Megan Portfolio, the Hartford Portfolio. check it out at the Yankee Institute. Yes, say hi to all the good friends at Yankee. Megan, thanks.
Thank you, my friends.
We'll talk to you next week. Thanks. All right.
Bye.